You're listening to Alex Pearson.
Good to have you here on this busy Tuesday. Thanks so much for having me along. It's great to have you. Saw this in the news. I'm thinking, why is it still in the news?
And yet here we are, and yeah, we're still doing these stories. In fact, I think we're going the wrong way. But certainly a new report shows that a growing number of kids and youth being killed in femicides in 1 in 5. So that's under 18 in the last 8 months have been killed. And we'll look at the numbers from the end of November until July. There were 42 confirmed femicides in the province of Ontario. 21% of those victims were minors, which is up 38. That's a huge jump. That's up 38 femicides recorded within the same time frame of last year. And one of those cases you might recall, it was the murder of Brianna Broadfoot. She's a 17-year-old. She was from the London area. She was fatally stabbed by an 18-year-old man who had been ordered by the courts not to contact her after past reports of abuse. And then, of course, he did what so many do, break those orders, violate those orders. And he was shot and killed when he confronted police with a knife. But he used that knife to kill Brianna. She was just 17-year-old. The other one that would shock you, and you probably heard about it, is the Holmesville, Ontario, where a 13-year-old boy was charged with a 12-year-old murder, a 12-year-old girl's murder. That's crazy. Why are these numbers going in the wrong direction? Why don't we take this more seriously, right? Like, we don't need these reports. Yes, we've got them, but why do we need reports to tell us what we already know? And that is, in this news, that all across all ages, femicides have been rising steadily since the pandemic. 50 victims recorded each year from the end of November 20th, the same time in 2023. Neka McGregor joining us, co-founder and executive director of Women's Center for Social Justice. Thanks so much for chatting with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What is it about this report that stands out from the other? Is it the age of those who have been victimized?
I think age is one of the shocking factors. But for me, what stands out is the increase in the numbers, the continual rise in the killings of women and girls. And how disappointing, and that's a very mild word, it is that society as a whole is not as outraged. Society as a whole is not doing what we think should be done. And that the individuals in charge across sectors are, again, not taking these killings seriously. And I don't know what it will take until the rest of society catches up with those of us in the sector who are doing this work. I pray that it does not involve one of your family members. I'm talking to the listeners before people wake up. But the reality, as you said in the opening, and it says that the numbers are increasing, the likelihood that you will know somebody who is at risk of impending femicide is very, very high. And so all of us, we cannot afford to remain silent and sort of on the sidelines, are shocked when it happens and surprised. We should not be surprised.
Well, we shouldn't, but we also need a lot more than just hashtags and thoughts and prayers. And that's pretty much what we've gotten since, you know, over the last 25 years. And then certainly it's gone on before. But, you know, the conversation of this certainly started changing, I think, early 2000s, when people started, you know, really kind of looking at this and saying, like, why is this happening? And that education was out there, all these great talking points, but nothing's actually changed. And I think the one big thing is that I don't think a lot of people know where to go. Like, where do you go if you're in that situation? Because it's so risky for women or those in gender-based violence relationships to leave, right? Whether they have kids or not. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to do because that's when the risk is greatest. And so is it that there are not facilities available? Is it an education problem? Is it barriers to new Canadians who may not know that, you know, their spouse, their partner cannot treat them this way? Like, what is the problem in your mind?
And it's all the above. Shelters are full beyond capacity. So it isn't about women leaving. I think part of what needs to be understood by society as a whole is that these types of violence, they are preventable.
Right.
There are things that you should not tell women, which is, why don't you leave? because one of the risk factors that we know for imminent pending femicide is separation. So telling women to just leave is actually, in most instances, exposing them to greater risk. It isn't only a problem with newcomers because, you know, Canadians of all ages are going through it. And you talked about the Ontario Association of Interwoven and Transition Houses reports that show that the numbers of victims of femicide is getting younger and younger. So it isn't a newcomer problem. It's a homegrown. It's happening here to Canadians as well as newcomers. And also this sort of misunderstanding as to why things have not moved ahead. There's been funding that's been given to shelters. There's not enough. There's been funding that's been given to frontline work. There's not enough. There's been funding that's been given to do this sort of social justice changing of the way the system works. But it comes at a price that most people are unwilling to pay. And that price is we need to understand how we raise boys and men. We need to change the way we raise boys and men. We need to change the way society treats women as if we are second class undeserving citizens. And that's partly why when women are killed, women and girls are killed, it seems like, you know, it's happened again. People go on with their lives, oh well, and leave the families who are suffering to deal with it. The reality is that there are these systemic, entrenched attitudes towards women and girls that deems us as unimportant. And I just want to say one thing, Alex, that even in the sort of the misogynistic context of femicide, there are some women and girls who are at higher risk of violence and femicide. And I'm talking about Indigenous women, I'm talking about Black women, and how the attention that society tends to pay, to give to these killings is even less than that is given to white women. So it's a very, very complex problem. There's racism, there's sexism, there's misogyny that's all entrenched in this that sort of complicates it. But it isn't a complicated problem.
Shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be,
but look, we got very antiquated court systems that, like an order is going to keep someone away from killing their partner, right? You can't just, we need an overhaul, I think, certainly in that area, because you can tell someone to stay away from a spouse. They're not going to. They're just not going to. They won't, you know. So, again, these are bigger issues, but I just, where do we start? And, you know, what in your mind is the most important starting point?
Well, we've been advocating, and so I'm a partial for a group that was set up by the brilliant Dr. Myrna Dawson out of the University of Guelph. It's called Canadian Femicide Observatory for Justice and Accountability. And since 2018, we've been calling, first of all, for the word femicide to be used in a different form of homicide. And the reason why femicide is important to actually label these types of killings is because they are distinctive, right? They are a particular type. There are circumstances that lead to these types of killings that are often perpetrated by men and boys, and often the victims are women and girls. So there's distinct factors around it. That's number one. Secondly, we've been calling for femicide itself to be a distinct crime in the criminal code. And the reason for calling for it to be recognized as a distinctive crime is that it helps people, again, understand the nature and the nuances of these killings. It's not enough to have a criminal legal response to it. There has to be prevention. There has to be prevention at the core of the work that we're doing. There has to be data that's being gathered, right, that helps people understand that these killings are preventable. There has to be much more public awareness, public education, public campaigns, again, to help people understand circumstances that can exacerbate the violence. And I think one of the biggest areas that is not being addressed is getting help for men who are using violence. Because I've said it so many times, the police cannot keep women safe. Expecting that the criminal legal system, the police is going to be the arbiters, the individuals who are going to step in. Police can't be there all the time for all women who are in need. So prevention that addresses supports for men so that they find better ways to handle their stresses and their grief and their anger, I think is one of the key areas that needs to be addressed and funded.
Well, I will look forward to the one day when I don't have to talk to you about this. We can talk about something else, and I hope that happens in my lifetime, but long
may be ahead.